is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft to comment on the headlines from Europe this morning on Ukraine conflict. For example, Putin orders troops to capture Donbass by March. This is the Telegraph. Or Russian missile destroys apartment block as EU leaders arrive in Kyiv. Or Macron, president of France, draws Russian anger with absurd comments about fighter jets. Or, for example, what we're looking at now, Boris Johnson suggests Sunak should forget about Putin and send fighter jets to Ukraine. Finally, U.S. to send new missiles to Ukraine with a 93-mile range. Anatole, a very good day to you. It is Groundhog Day, and in the United States, it's not just how many more weeks of winter, and we have a very mild winter in New England. It's hard to believe 6 more weeks of this. However, it's in popular culture a way of talking about doing the same thing today you did yesterday. These headlines are highly suggestive of a repeat of conversations over these last weeks and months as we approach the first full year of the war in Ukraine. Weapons, support, money, Russian offensive. In general, before we get into details, what is your measure of the war as we approach 1 year? Is it stalemated? Is it favoring one side or the other, or unknown? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. I have to say, I mean, if the rodent in Groundhog Day had been flying an F-16, the plot of that film would have been very different. And I think Bill Murray would have played his part rather differently as well, faced with a heavily armed groundhog. I mean, the thing is that the advocates of sending fighter jets to Ukraine, which is part of the hope of large sections of the West for total Ukrainian victory over Russia, depends on Russia sticking to the Groundhog Day script, which so far it has done, which is to say, it has, to some extent, escalated in Ukraine in response, you know, to the moved to the attempts to destroy Ukrainian infrastructure and energy supplies. But Russia has not retaliated by some form of attack or threatened attack on the West, or, you know, the ultimate threat, the use of nuclear weapons. And that has led to a perception in the West that Putin is bluffing. And therefore, you know, if first the supply of HIMARS artillery systems did not lead to a Russian response, if the supply of tanks, main battle tanks, did not lead to a Russian response, well, the supply of fighter planes will not lead to a Russian response. And even in the last resort, a Ukrainian move to recapture Crimea and the whole of the Donbass will not lead to a Russian response. Well, that is, you know, to put it mildly, an unproven assumption. And of course, so far, though Western weapons have stopped the Russians and helped the Ukrainians to push Russia back in a couple of significant areas, they have not so far threatened Russia with complete defeat. And the loss of territories that would be not just the loss of which would threaten the survival of the Putin regime, but the loss of territories which, in the case of Crimea, are regarded by the overwhelming majority of Russians, and Crimeans, by the way, as simply part of Russia. So the problem is, it's not really Groundhog Day for the future. There are quite new factors, risk being introduced, and that risks a much higher level of Russian response, in my view.
There are a number of suggestions, either that the Russian offensive is underway or imminent. These suggestions come from Kyiv, but other observers of the battlefield. So I turn from the battlefield, which is fog of war, to an article that is in Foreign Affairs. As everyone knows, this is an extremely influential publication, online and in hard copy as well. And this article is written by Michael McFaul, professor of political science, senior fellow of the Hoover Institution, most importantly, director of the Freeman Spogli Institute for International Studies, and the former ambassador to the Russian Federation from the United States during the Obama administration, a man who's well-versed, his Russian is excellent, and his article repeats a number of the things that have been said in the news these last days about increasing weapon effectiveness and lethality. The F-16s is not the least of it. Gray Eagle or Reaper drones, a system called GLMR, AFTACAMS, in other words, an array of acronyms that mean longer and more accurate weaponry. However, there's more to this recommendation for what should be announced on February 24th, the one-year anniversary of the start of the conflict. Mr. McFaul, Ambassador McFaul, is also suggesting that a protracted war risks the public turning away, and therefore the speed and time is of the moment. He recommends severe sanctions, ones that haven't already been issued or have been, and increasing their severity, taking the $60 oil price cap of Russian exports to $30. Also, all managers involved in all the Russian infrastructure to be sanctioned. Also, what we're looking at is an across-the-board empowerment of dissent wherever it is in the world, in the Russian diaspora, and transferring, most provocatively, the $300 billion in foreign reserves that the Russians do not have access to because it's outside their reach since the war started, transferring that to Ukraine. Do you measure, Anatole, at this point? And Ambassador McFaul is not an outlier. This represents thinking in power centers in Washington, especially in the Democratic-controlled Senate, the new Senate. Do you measure that increasing severity of across the board? That's what the ambassador is calling for, not only weapons, but sanctions, but money, but empowerment. And speed. He wants speed. Do you measure that that can change the battlefield?
No, not in itself. I mean, because these systems will take a long time to introduce. That's also true of the main battle tanks. It'll take a long time to train the Ukrainians in their use. At some point in future, after perhaps 6 months or so, they could make a big difference. But of course, McFaul is precisely saying, no, we need to do things much more quickly. And sanctions so far, remember that the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia are by far the most severe that America has imposed, other than, on Iraq, I suppose. And yet have had no effect whatsoever. I mean, not merely no effect in getting Russia to surrender, but surprisingly little effect on the Russian economy, which has proved really remarkably resilient. Now, one key reason for that is something that, people like McFaul always totally forget, which is that America is not the whole world and the West is not the whole world. I always remember when I was working with McFaul at the Carnegie Endowment, 20 years now, in the run-up to the Iraq War, and there was a line going around that then it was France and Germany that have isolated themselves by opposing the Iraq War. And I pointed out to an audience, including Mike, that, yes, France and Germany had isolated themselves, and China had isolated itself, and India, and Russia, and the vast majority of African countries, and of Asian countries, and of South American countries, all of whom opposed the Iraq War. So it reminded me of an old joke, true, by the way, about a British headline in the 19th century, fog over the channel, continent isolated. The thing is that a majority of countries around the world, though most of them have condemned the Russian invasion, are not prepared to join in very harsh Western sanctions against Russia. And that's partly because of their own national interests in continued economic ties. But it is also because they remember much more vividly than we appear to past instances of United States and Western violation of international law and illegal invasions of countries. And so they see this in a way that McFaul is constitutionally incapable of doing. in much more balanced terms. But as a result, I mean, if McFall's demands were to be implemented, it would require the United States to put immense pressure on a range of countries, including key partners around the world, like India, including, you know, the largest states in South America, like Brazil. That is not something that is going to gain America more friends
around the world. I'm speaking with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We're commenting on the approach of the first anniversary, the first commemoration, first dark day of the war in Ukraine, and what is to be done, the recommendations for more weapons, for more sanctions, for severe measures against all aspects of the Russian Federation and the Russian people, including travel restrictions, may or may not answer. However, we're going to turn to the story of NATO as well, because coterminous with the war fighting is the question of NATO unity, EU prosperity, and the road ahead for the rest of the planet. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Take a look under your bed. Find stuff under there? What about jobs? No? Now try your basement. There's a pair of overalls that overall you're not so into anymore. A perfectly good laptop that hasn't sat in your lap in months. And even more stuff, but still no jobs? Well, you really have both. See, stuff is defined as household articles considered as a group. Sometimes this stuff is no longer needed. Wait, no longer needed? That can't be right. Because remember those jobs you were looking for? Those are really needed, and they're the stuff inside your stuff. Even inside that winter coat that moved with you to Phoenix. Our job is to unlock those jobs, and it starts when you donate your stuff to your local Goodwill. Here's how we do it. When you donate to Goodwill, we sell your stuff to provide job training for people right here in your community. So just by teaming up with Goodwill, you help create jobs. And isn't that worth parting with the leftover keytar from your 80s cover band? Goodwill. Donate stuff, create jobs. Find your nearest donation center at goodwill.org. A message from Goodwill and the Ad Council.